Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, your host, Francesca. So in today's episode, I wanted to talk about the concept of estrogen clearance from the body, how we break it down and clear it out. So you may or may not know that when it comes to our estrogen, once the body's used it in all of its different ways, so imagine estrogen's compound, estrogen plural, because there are different types of estrogen in the body, although we just tend to refer to it as estrogen, like it's one thing. There are actually a few different types of estrogen that we make in the body, and they all need to basically do their relevant things in the body and then swiftly be lost from the body. So we need to use it and then very swiftly lose it. So that's the concept that I want to talk about today, because it's something that we really do need to understand so that we can support our body to do it as well as it possibly can. So when I say lose, I'm talking about essentially a biological process known as estrogen metabolism, also known as estrogen clearance, also known as estrogen detoxification. They all pretty much mean the same thing. For the sake of this podcast, I think I'm going to call it estrogen clearance or estrogen detox. But we're basically talking about the same thing. So in a nutshell, first the body breaks down or metabolizes. Metabolizes basically means to break something down within the body, usually a compound like that the body has made, and then it's done its jobs around the body. It needs to be broken down. So it applies to lots of different things, but today we're just talking about estrogen. So first of all, the body breaks it down or metabolizes it, hence the term estrogen metabolism. So it's metabolizing that used estrogen compound, which is basically a multi-step process, primarily occurring in the liver. And then it's removed from the body completely. So it gets broken down in the liver, then it gets sent on to your other organs, like your into your bile, your urine, and your stool, to be passed out of the body permanently. So that is essentially what we're going to be talking about today, is what I'm going to explain. So this process of breaking down your used estrogen and then clearing it out of the body permanently is occurring at all stages of womanhood. As long as estrogen is being made in our body, even in tiny amounts like postmenopause, it needs to be efficiently broken down and passed completely out of the body. So as soon as we start making estrogen as a teen, once we first start having our periods, you know, for the rest of our life, essentially, it's a really important process. So why is it so important? So essentially, if your estrogens aren't properly broken down once they've been used and then removed permanently from the body, it can go back into circulation in the body. And as you can imagine, this isn't supposed to happen. If something gets used and then broken down to be cleared out of the body, you don't want it to be reabsorbed back into circulation. If this happens, because, for example, the breakdown process isn't working properly, we end up with more estrogen than we should have. And common symptoms of having excess estrogen are things like heavy, painful periods with clotting, sore breasts, worse PMS, including things like headaches, water retention, bloating, mood swings, low mood, anger, rage, irritability, weight gain, trouble losing body fat, and even growth of fibroids. And it can even increase the risk of estrogen-driven cancers if we have excess estrogen remaining in the body, or particularly estrogen that should have been cleared out, but because that wasn't happening efficiently, it's come back into the body. So that is quite common to see that. When we see people with, for example, in my practice, if I see women who are really struggling with these sorts of symptoms, particularly when they're before, you know, they've moved into perimenopause, we're always thinking, okay, has this person got issues potentially breaking down their used estrogen and it's resulting in them having excess estrogen remaining in the body when it shouldn't and causing these symptoms? A lot of these symptoms, can also be caused by the situation of having unopposed estrogen, which I've talked about a few times before in previous episodes, where estrogen essentially isn't balanced out by its partner hormone progesterone midway through the cycle after ovulating. If we don't ovulate and therefore we don't make progesterone, or if we don't make enough progesterone from ovulating, we have a situation where estrogen is left unopposed, and that can also cause those symptoms that I just mentioned. But if somebody, for example, is ovulating well and they are making progesterone and they're having these symptoms, once we've looked at the progesterone aspect of it and kind of ticked that box, then we'll be thinking about, okay, what is possibly causing this person to have this estrogen remaining in the body when it, you know, they're possibly not clearing it out as well as they should. Maybe they are actually genuinely making too much estrogen, but, you know, there's all these different factors to consider, and this is one of them. So also things like histamine symptoms. So, you know, allergy-like symptoms like itchiness, headaches, bloating, stuffy nose, that kind of itchiness in the throat, or the ears, like internally, you know, that kind of feeling that you're getting a cold, or you've just inhaled something that's irritated you. So those kind of typical histamine symptoms, but even histamine symptoms like skin reactions, rashes, hives, and also things like headaches and fatigue, you know, these can be linked to lots of other things. But histamine, especially during perimenopause, when, as I've talked about on previous episodes, when estrogen can actually rise 2 to 3 times higher than it's ever been before, we can have levels of estrogen in the body that are much higher than we've ever experienced, especially in the earlier stages of perimenopause, so the kind of first half of our 40s, for example. Even in our late 40s, we can still have high levels of estrogen, and that can create these kind of histamine symptoms that we maybe never had in the past. And now, since being in our 40s, we're experiencing histamine-related symptoms, which is something I am experiencing since being in my 40s. But looking at estrogen clearance is really important because, you know, like I said, if we're not breaking it down properly and we're not clearing it out of the body, it can come back into circulation and increase the likelihood of these sorts of symptoms, which are typical high estrogen symptoms. Now, whilst estrogen isn't a bad or dangerous hormone, it isn't. It's a wonderful hormone. I hope from listening to previous episodes, you know that by now. But we do need to be able to use it and then clear it out of the body efficiently. We don't want high levels because we didn't, you know, clear it out properly, and so then it came back into the body when it shouldn't. That is definitely not what we want. We want to be able to make our estrogen, use our estrogen, break it down efficiently and clear it out of the body efficiently, and so on. Now, efficiently clearing estrogen from the body can help temper the highs of the estrogen roller coaster during perimenopause as well. So again, if you've been listening to my podcast, you'll know, and you know, that one of the major characteristics of being in perimenopause is that estrogen is on this erratic roller coaster. So one day we can have a sharp drop in your estrogen, and then the next day it can be spiking really high. And if we are more efficient at clearing out our used estrogen, we can temper those highs. So, you know, we're possibly not going to have those really horrible symptoms, those typical symptoms of high estrogen on those particular days, if we can just temper it by making sure what we do have in the body is being cleared out properly. Also, if someone's taking menopause hormone therapy in the body identical form of estrogen, like the estradiol patch or the gel, so I'm not talking about the pill or other synthetic hormone medications, I'm talking about the body identical estrogen replacement therapy that someone might be on in the later stages of perimenopause or postmenopause, efficient estrogen clearance can impact the efficacy of their particular dose and their experience of using it as well. And even with dosing, so when it comes to finding the right dose for their gel or their patch, and being able to break down that body identical estrogen once it's done its jobs in the body, can impact the dose needed. For example, if the dose doesn't seem to be working for them, maybe it's a case of improving their detox of estrogen rather than the actual dose itself. So discussing menopause hormone therapy and dosing is completely outside of my professional remit, but I'm just sharing this information with you just so you know. Now, in a minute, I'm going to explain how the body breaks down estrogen once it's been used, which is a process that's occurring 24/7. So this is something that is happening literally every minute of every day. But before I get into that, you might be thinking, okay, she's talking about how we break it down. But how would we even know how efficient or not our own estrogen clearance is? So in my practice, which I'll mention again later, but in my practice, I use a urine test called the Dutch test, which stands for dried urine test for comprehensive hormones. That's what Dutch stands for. And I'll explain how that works as I go through the breakdown process with you. But that is essentially how the only way we would know how we're breaking down estrogen. I also get clients, for example, who come to me and they don't have the budget for this testing because it isn't cheap. So they can't sort of just keep doing it willy-nilly to find out how they're getting on. But if somebody, for example, doesn't have the budget for any testing outside of what their own GP can do for them, then we can go by symptoms and we can have a rough idea that this person might need some support with how their body's breaking down estrogen. So we can do the things, which we'll talk about as we go through the episode, to help support that. You know, and if they start to feel better and get good results, so, you know, for example, their periods aren't as crazy heavy and clotty anymore, and they're not having the same worse PMS that they were having before, and their headaches have reduced and their histamine reactions have reduced, then we know we were barking up the right tree, basically, and supporting them in the right way. But if people do have the budget for the testing, it is really helpful because it just gives a really great insight into how that person is breaking down their estrogen. So let's get into how your body clears your used estrogen. So the process of breaking down your used estrogen begins in your liver. And there are two main phases of estrogen breakdown. They're simply referred to as phase one and phase two. And like I said, this process is happening 24/7. It literally never takes a break. So as a side note, this is why I get frustrated when with people that are selling like 7-day detoxes or New Year liver cleanses or juice detoxes, you know, to support your liver. When we need to be supporting our liver to detox all year round, and your liver needs a whole heap of different so-called cofactor nutrients, so nutrients that help to support the multiple detoxification pathways that all of your toxins and used estrogen go through in order to be cleared out. And that does not include green juices or fasting. Like, not eating or only having juices is not how we support our liver detoxification pathways to do the work they need to do. So I really do get frustrated with that. So please don't buy into these detoxes. They are in no way helping your liver to detoxify anything. All they're doing maybe is allowing your digestive system to take a little rest whilst you're not eating or you're just having juices. But it's, you know, it's a temporary rest, right? Because you have to go back to eating. And that rest might be fine. It might be needed, but it's not helping detox. Detox happens in the liver. Gut is one of the final stages of detoxification because anything that's been detoxified will usually be sent into the gut to then be passed out via a bowel movement. But it's not the first port of call for detoxification. It's the liver. And fasting or drinking green juices isn't supporting that. Just leaving you hungry and unhappy, thinking you're supporting your liver. And again, the other factor is that we don't just want to do that once a year. We want to do it every day, support the liver. Okay, so side note over. Let me explain how the two phases work, phase one and phase two. So once the estrogens have circulated throughout your body, doing all the amazing jobs that they have to do, from strengthening your bones, balancing your mood, supporting your brain, keeping your skin and hair strong and shiny and supple, to keeping your menstrual cycles healthy and supporting your heart and supporting your metabolism, these estrogens end up in the liver, where they go straight into phase one. So phase one is essentially a chemical process called hydroxylation. And during this chemical process, estrogens get broken down, metabolized, into three different metabolites. These are basically breakdown products of that metabolism, of that breakdown of estrogen. They get broken down into these three different metabolites they basically go down three different pathways in the breakdown process, resulting in three different metabolites or byproducts of the breakdown process, right? So remember that we're going to call these byproducts of the breakdown process, we're calling them metabolites. So it gets broken down into three different metabolites at the end. And these are, you don't have to remember this, but I just want to explain it all. So they're known as 2-hydroxyestrogen, 4-hydroxyestrogen, and 16-hydroxyestrogen. We can say OH for short. So 2OH, 4OH, and 16OH. So these are the three different metabolites that your used estrogens get broken down into in phase one in the liver. Now, we want most of our estrogens to get broken down via the 2OH pathway. Now, by most, I mean about 70 to 80% of our used estrogens wants to go down the 2OH pathway in the breakdown process, resulting in the 2OH metabolite. This is essentially the most safest or favorable pathway for it to go down, for most of our estrogens to go down. When I say safest, it's like, you know, the cancer protective, for example, and protects us from the typical symptoms of excess estrogen, like the breast pain, the heavy periods, all of that. Then we want no more than our than about 11, 12% of our estrogen to go down the 4OH pathway. So you can think of the 2OH pathway as green, and the 4OH pathway, you can think of that as red. Because the 4OH metabolites, the red ones, they're shown to convert into these reactive molecules in the body that can damage DNA and increase the risk of estrogen-related cancers. But as long as that 4OH metabolite is kept within range, so under the sort of 11-12% mark, then it's fine for some of it to go down there. It's inevitable. We're going to get the red, the green, and the 16OH pathway. But we just want to keep it in check, basically, in healthy range. And then we've got the 16OH pathway, which you can just think of like as grey, because it's neither red nor green, neither good nor bad, let's say. It's kind of somewhere in between. We're not really sure whether it's good or bad. There is some research that the 16OH pathway, those metabolites can support bone strength. But there's also some research to suggest that those metabolites can increase estrogen specifically in the breast tissue and cause cancer cells to grow there. So again, we are inevitably, as humans, we're going to break down our estrogen down all three pathways. We just want to keep them in check. So there's a particular percentage or ratio level for all three pathways that we would want to make sure they're kept in check. And that's what, for example, the Dutch urine test shows, which is why I love it so much for myself and my clients. It wouldn't be something that you have to do all the time, but even just kind of doing it once to see a snapshot of how at that moment in time you're breaking down your estrogens to get a rough idea. If it's great, then, you know, potentially you can carry on as you are. If it's not so good, then you just have, okay, I know I need to kind of take some actions here. Okay, so that is the phase one. Now, remember that this process I just described is called hydroxylation. Now, again, you don't have to remember all this, but I just want to tell you this stuff so that you can appreciate afterwards, once I've been through it, the importance of certain foods and nutrients for proper liver detoxification of estrogens and also other chemicals and toxins. We need to clear these out all the time. Now, obviously, estrogen isn't a toxin, but once it's been used, it does need to be detoxified and removed from the body, and that happens through the liver. So the process that I'm referring to today also refers to other like toxins and chemicals, but I'm obviously only talking about estrogen today. So this hydroxylation process in phase one starts the process of inactivating your used estrogens, allowing it to then safely be removed from the body. And that inactivation process uses specific enzymes in the body called the CYP450. So again, you don't need to remember this, but there's a group of enzymes in the body called CYP450, and they all support this process. Now, these enzymes can be supported through various food and lifestyle, you know, interventions, and they can also be hindered by various food and lifestyle interventions, which we'll have a look at in a minute. Now, once estrogens have gone through phase one, two of those metabolites I just described, so the 2OH and the 4OH, move very quickly into phase two. Not 16OH, just the 2 and the 4OH metabolites. They go into the second phase straight away. They need to move fast because these phase one metabolites of 2OH and 4OH can actually be more harmful now, more toxic to the body. And so they mustn't be reabsorbed at that stage. So phase two swoops in swiftly to take over. And in phase two, those metabolites are neutralized or kind of made safe. They're turned into water-soluble safe molecules that can now be excreted from the body via the bile, the stool, and the urine. So basically, we're going to wee it out or poo it out. So phase two, if you like, it packages up those metabolites into little boxes and delivers them to the intestines for permanent removal from the body. So I like to kind of picture it as literally like a little gift box with a little bow on top, and there's loads of them. And that's what phase two is essentially doing in the factory, and then sending those little boxes off to the intestines. And that's where it needs to be passed out of the body permanently via a bowel movement. So this phase two part of the process is called methylation detoxification, and it converts those two metabolites into a further, as I said, safe water-soluble metabolite called 2-methoxyestrogen. Again, you don't have to remember any of this. I just want you to kind of get the picture that there's a lot going on in the liver. It has to happen efficiently, and you know, it uses certain cofactor nutrients, food, lifestyle factors that will support it. Now, this methylation detoxification process, so phase two, uses the help of an enzyme in the body called COMT, also called catecholamethyltransferase. So again, you don't need to remember it. It's just known as COMT. But the point I'm making is those CYP450 group of enzymes and this COMT or COMT enzyme, they have these various nutrient cofactors that support them to do their work. And again, there's certain things in our diet and our lifestyle that negatively impact how these work. So this is just why I wanted to give you this big explanation of how it's all working. And also something else that can affect these enzymes is that some women can have genetic polymorphisms, or also known as SNPs, which is basically the presence of two or more sort of variations on a specific gene, specific DNA sequence. And that can impact the CYP450 enzymes responsible for phase one, and also the COMT enzyme in phase two. If we were to know this information, so for example, that person might have done some genetic testing that's specifically looking at these genes, we can then know, okay, well, this person, because your genetic results are for life, they're never going to change. So we would then know that we would need to support this woman forever with those particular enzymes. We'd have to give that person, make sure that person has plenty of those cofactor nutrients that are needed to support those enzymes to work their best, because we know that that person has this genetic SNP on those enzymes. And, you know, without that support all the time, they may not work very well. And that's the thing about our genetics. Again, another side note is that they are just the bullet, but they're not the trigger. So while they will load the gun, this is quite a well-known saying in the functional medicine world, your genetics will load the gun, but they do not pull the trigger. It's actually your environment, so your nutrition, your lifestyle habits, etc., that will pull the trigger or not. So that just means that we can work with our genetics by way of managing our environment to make sure that that trigger isn't pulled. Okay, that was a side note. So let's go back to phase one and how we can support phase one. So I've explained how it works. But what's really great is that certain foods, certain botanicals and nutrients can encourage phase one and phase two to work more efficiently. There's specific foods that encourage the hydroxylation process, that phase one, the breakdown of your used estrogens into the three different metabolites. For example, certain foods eaten every day as part of our regular diet can be really supportive of pushing more of our estrogen down that green 2OH pathway and less of it down the red one, which, remember, is the not so safe pathway. That's the one that can damage DNA and increase our risk of breast cancer. So things like cruciferous vegetables, these are really big players in helping estrogen to go down that green pathway. So that's foods like broccoli, cauliflower, kale, cabbage, watercress, bok choy, Brussels sprouts. You know, just Google cruciferous vegetables and you'll get the list. So making the cruciferous vegetables basically the foundation of your vegetable supply. This is what I do. So every day we have some form of at least one or maybe two of the cruciferous vegetables every day with our meals. And then we also add lots of different colorful vegetables every day, and they'll change every day. But I always have something cruciferous based at least once or twice a day. All the different colorful vegetables, the reds, the yellows, the oranges, the deep purples, like the beetroot, the red cabbage, the red onion, berries. So the blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, blackberries, things like grapefruit, other citrus fruits, pomegranate. These are great. All those colorful vegetables and those berries are anything that's like really deeply vibrantly colored. And the dark green leafy veg and things like that as well. They're very helpful, again, at supporting these pathways. Flaxseed, so 1 to 2 tablespoons of ground flaxseed can be very supportive of the 2OH pathway. It's also been shown, once that used estrogen is in the gut waiting to be excreted, you know, permanently via a bowel movement, flaxseed can bind to that estrogen and help to pull it out of the body. So flaxseed is great, 1 to 2 tablespoons. It must be ground. Otherwise, it just passes straight through. Fresh herbs and spices like turmeric, rosemary is great for the 2OH pathway, and parsley, all of your fresh herbs and spices, but particularly those. ECGC, I'm not even going to say the full word because I can't even remember now. It's something, anyway, ECGC is the active compound in good quality green tea. So not just your regular, you know, your PG Tips green tea or your Twinings, sorry, but you're looking for like good quality loose leaf green tea. And whether it's put into tea bags or not, but you want that kind of loose leaf green tea. It contains this active compound called ECGC, which has been shown to support that green pathway as well. Oily fish for the omega-3 fish oils, EPA and DHA. So that's your salmon, mackerel, trout, herring, anchovies. And quality soy. So edamame beans, organic tofu or tempeh. These are your quality soy. Any other soy is not good quality. It's very highly processed and it's no longer actually a, you know, nutritious food that would support your estrogen levels and clearance. So stick to quality soy, edamame beans and tofu and tempeh. And then some of the specific cofactor or supportive nutrients that support the COMT enzyme in phase two to work better include magnesium, B vitamins, particularly B12, B6, folate, choline, N-acetylcysteine, also known as NAC, which comes from the amino acid L-cysteine, which is a clue there is that amino acids are in protein foods. So one of the big reasons we need protein to help us to detox, and why a juice fast or a fast of any kind is not helping our liver. And then also something called trimethylglycine, also known as TMG. So these are things you might see, I'm just giving you these things because you might see these on like supplement labels for something that's touted as, you know, supporting estrogen detoxification, for example. And if you do see these things, then it's a good thing to see. But a lot of these nutrients are also rich in good quality animal food. So your animal fats, your animal proteins, you know, loaded with B12 and the other B vitamins, choline, cysteine, NAC. So yeah, again, another reason why food is needed to support detox, not the opposite. Now, things that hinder phase one and slow down phase two. So phase one, again, just as a reminder, is breaking down your used estrogen into those three different pathways. We want most of our estrogen to go down the green pathway, you know, as I've explained. And then those two metabolites move very swiftly onto phase two. Phase two needs to be efficient enough. We don't want it to be too slow. Likewise, we don't want phase one to be too slow and phase two to be too fast. We want them both to be balanced. So things that hinder phase one and slow down phase two are basically foods or substances that increase inflammation in the body, because inflammation negatively impacts how our hormones are basically broken down, how they metabolize, which pathways they go down. And it would promote more of your estrogen to go down the 4-OH, the red pathway, for example. And this goes for all your hormones, so like testosterone and cortisol, they get broken down into metabolites. You know, and some are more helpful, some are less helpful for health. And so, you know, obviously today we're just focusing on estrogen, but inflammation can impact the breakdown of all our hormones and so many other processes in the body. So that would include inflammatory foods like your processed omega-6 seed and vegetable oils. So this is your vegetable, rapeseed and sunflower cooking oils. So just your kind of cheap cooking oils and sprays. What you really want to, what you only want to be cooking with is light olive oil or ghee or butter or coconut oil. These are what you want to be cooking with at home. Now, we want to sort of try to minimize takeaways and eating out. Like, we don't want to be relying on takeaways and eating out, not because of the food as such, because of course we can get really healthy takeaways, but it's because they will use these oils. So it's all about these oils, the vegetable, rapeseed or sunflower oils. We can obviously not use them at home, and instead we can use coconut oil, like I just said, or olive oil, but restaurants and takeaways, they're going to use the cheapest options, of course. So we just want to be mindful of that. Processed foods that include these oils. So that would even include healthy, so-called healthy processed foods like hummus. I think I said this before, but I get so frustrated that shop-bought hummus hardly any of them have any olive oil, which is the actual recipe. So homemade hummus is much better because you can just use your extra virgin olive oil. Some in the shop do have olive oil, but they also have rapeseed or vegetable oil or sunflower oil because they're trying to cut up prices. Margarines are inflammatory. They're also known as trans fats because essentially margarine is not even a real food. It's just made from industrially processed vegetable oils or omega-6 seed oils. So always stick to real butter, which your body knows what to do with, and it provides healthy saturated fats versus these inflammatory industrially processed fats. And then your deep fried foods, obviously we're deep frying foods in, you know, rapeseed or sunflower oil. So that's going to turn them into trans fats. Regular confectionery and long life baked goods. If you look at the labels, you will see that they contain these vegetable rapeseed or sunflower oils or margarines, for example. Then we have, you know, the obvious things like sugar, but also refined carbohydrates like your white flour products. So if you're relying on wraps and bagels and pastries as your carbohydrate choices, then that can create inflammation in the body because sugar and refined carbohydrates are going to increase levels of insulin. And insulin is a fantastic life-saving hormone, but when it's too high, it will be inflammatory and it can impact things like our ability to ovulate, but it can also impact various detoxification pathways in the liver. And then things like charred sort of blackened meats. I know I love a barbecue as much as anyone else, but you know, if you're only doing it a couple of times a year, that's fine. But if you're always blackening your meats, you just want to be aware of that. And pesticides, so essentially your non-organic fruits and vegetables. But we have to do, you know, we have to be realistic. I don't buy all my fruits and vegetables organic. I don't have the budget for them all to be organic. And sometimes you just have to pop into shops and get what you need and they don't have organic or, you know. So I do try my best. Sometimes I'll buy like frozen organic stuff because, you know, frozen organic vegetables or berries because it can be cheaper. But I also pick my battles, you know. I do a lot of other things really, really well. So if I have, you know, non-organic berries, for example, which is usually the case, I just think, you know, at the end of the day, it's fine because I'm doing so much good in other areas. And I think my body can probably process this. It's just looking at your overall total load and seeing where you can just make some changes to pull back on those, you know, inflammatory sources in your life. Now, alcohol is also something we need to consider reducing or even avoiding completely in perimenopause because it just has such a significant impact on our ability to process our used estrogen. It can encourage estrogen to go down the not so safe red 408. And also when the liver senses alcohol, the liver will prioritize the detoxification of alcohol over anything else, leaving the detoxification of estrogen at the back of the queue. And that will then lead to the typical estrogen excess symptoms I mentioned earlier, like their heavy periods, breast pain, clotting, headaches, histamine symptoms, the bloating, weight gain, for example. So alcohol is really big. Anyone that comes to me and just says, I'm having issues with these symptoms, I'm having issues losing weight, but they drink alcohol, it is something we need to address. And if they're not prepared to significantly reduce how much they're drinking, if it's a lot, then sometimes I just have to say, you know, you can only get so far without addressing that. So inflammation is one of the biggest factors that impairs detoxification, but stress is another one. So chronic stress in and of itself is inflammatory, and it just causes a lot of havoc in the body for hormone production, communication, and clearance. So it's another source of inflammation, which can be another source of, you know, another negative factor adding to our ability to detoxify properly. So both chronic stress and inflammation can impair those CYP450 enzymes in phase one and the COMT enzyme in phase two. Another thing to consider is the impact of environmental toxins and chemicals on our liver detox pathway. So certain chemicals, also known as xenoestrogens or endocrine disrupting chemicals, you might have heard of them as well. They have the ability to enter the cells in that take in estrogen in place of your real estrogen. And once they get inside those cells, they can cause havoc essentially in your body's hormone or endocrine system. That's what the endocrine system is. It's your hormone system. They can disrupt as well the detoxification pathways. They can kind of block them from working properly or just sort of impair them. So these endocrine disrupting chemicals, they've been shown to affect reproduction, which means our ability to ovulate successfully, which we need to do in order to make levels of progesterone while we're still having cycles. And then it can sort of, they can drive the symptoms of high estrogen. So it's basically chemicals found in your plastic. So that would be your sort of plastic drinking bottles. If you're cooking or heating or freezing foods in plastics, then you could just sort of switch that out to only doing those things in glass or stainless steel or ceramic, for example. These chemicals are found in pesticides. They're found in skin and hair care products, your regular commercial stuff that we see on the, you know, high street shelves, all fragrances, anything that says perfume, parfum, any fragrance at all, including like fragrance candles, room sprays, you know, plug-ins, makeup, household cleaning products and detergents. So I'll do a whole separate episode on endocrine disrupting chemicals soon. So I'll really kind of dive into where we find them and how we can start to reduce them. But that is definitely something that can impair our ability to detoxify well. So that's what's happening in the liver when it comes to breaking down and clearing out your used estrogen. And remember, it's happening 24/7, 365 days a year. And remember that I said that phase two packages up the metabolites into these little gift boxes with a bow on top and delivers them to the intestines for permanent removal from the body. Now that is essentially phase three. So phase one and phase two are happening in the liver, and then phase two passes everything over to phase three, which is the gut. Now, phase three refers to your bowel movements, the regularity and the quality of them, and your gut microbiome. So that's basically the collection of bacteria that lives in your gut. Now, something known as dysbiosis, which is basically a bacterial imbalance where the diversity of different strains in your gut microbiome is low, so you don't have enough diversity, basically. And all strains of bacteria are favoring the unfriendly or pathogenic strains, and there's not enough levels of beneficial bacteria that protect the gut. This situation, known as dysbiosis, can lead to raised levels of an enzyme in the gut called beta-glucuronidase. Again, you don't have to remember this. I'm just wanting to give you the background. But this enzyme, beta-glucuronidase, can cause those nicely packaged up, you know, cleaned estrogen metabolites to be unpacked and sent back into the circulation, back into your body. This isn't good. So this would create the situation of, excess estrogen, basically. And those highs of the estrogen roller coaster that we have in perimenopause will feel a lot higher. All of those symptoms being more exacerbated, those typical high estrogen symptoms like the breast pain, heavy painful periods with clotting, fibroids even, those kind of symptoms will just feel and be a lot worse. And also, if you're not having at least once a day, you're passing a fully formed, full bowel movement, those packages can just sit there and go back into circulation. So it could be that you do have high levels of beta-glucuronidase that's unpacking things and sending it back up, and a situation where you're not passing a fully formed full bowel movement at least once a day. So it could be both of those situations or just one or the other. So phase three is very important, and sometimes it's the first place to start. So, you know, there's no point having good phase one and phase two, but a bad phase three. So when everything gets sent to phase three, it's just not passing things out permanently and it's just sending it all back into circulation. So we have to make sure that phase three is working really well. So essentially that is your gut health. And that's why gut health is so important for hormone health. The two things come together. So I'm going to do a separate episode on phase three as well soon. So I'll do a separate one on the endocrine disrupting chemicals and a separate one on gut health, probably in the next one. So going back to earlier, I was talking about the Dutch test. So can you test for these different phases? Yes, we can test for phases one and phase two through that Dutch test that I mentioned. I go via a lab called Regenerous Labs, but they're a practitioner only lab. So you need to be working with a practitioner who would then order the test for you. You just need to be aware, though, that tests like the Dutch test, they're what's known as functional tests, which means that they're not available in the NHS or via your conventional medical doctor. So your standard doctor or GP is unlikely to know about these tests. And if you're interested in having the Dutch test done, for example, you'd need to be working with a private functional medicine, specifically functional medicine doctor, or a nutritional therapy practitioner like me, or someone else. You know, there's lots of nutritional therapy practitioners out there. You might want to work with me. You might know others. So they would be able to access these tests for you. I use this testing in my practice all the time. So just drop me an email if you want to work with me on this. That's francesca@francescaliberotti.com. You'll also find that in the show notes. And then the other way that we can test, obviously we want to test phase three, that would be via a stool test, a comprehensive stool test. So again, not the typical stool analysis that we might get via the GP or the hospital. They would literally just be checking for, you know, things like H. pylori or C. diff, the kind of horrible things, which is great to test for, really important to test for. But once those horrible, like pathogenic bacteria have been ruled out, they wouldn't test like the sort of functional side of your gut. So that again would need to be accessed through a nutritional therapist like me or a functional medicine private doctor. So that is basically a comprehensive stool analysis. So it's looking at all the different types of bacteria that's living in your gut microbiome. It's looking at those levels of beta-glucuronidase to see if they're raised. It's looking at your digestive process and how well that's doing. So it's really great. Testing annually would really be wonderful. If someone could test both the Dutch and the, I use the GI effects test from Genova Diagnostics. Again, that's a practitioner only laboratory. If they could do that, like one point in time, just to see where they're at and then test annually to make sure that everything's staying optimized once it's been supported, once you've got your results, that would be amazing. But they're not cheap. And I'd love to do both of them every year. I always say I will, but I don't. I haven't done the Dutch test now for about a year. So I'm definitely due another one. I'll do it in January. It's just really helpful, particularly during perimenopause, just to make sure that we're breaking down our estrogen really, really well. So whilst don't tend to test like levels of estrogen during perimenopause, because the nature of perimenopause is that estrogen is fluctuating erratically. So if you tested it one day and it was high, you don't know if it's genuinely high or if it was just high on that day on its roller coaster. Likewise, if it was low, you don't know if it's genuinely low yet. It could have just been a low day on the roller coaster. But the beauty of the metabolism, checking these metabolism pathways, is that that stays, that just remains the same, you know, so you can just test that kind of any time. And that's what I love about using the Dutch test. Because with the Dutch test, you do get the levels of estrogen and progesterone on that day that you tested. But what we're really looking at is how you're breaking down your estrogen. The Dutch test also looks at your cortisol as well. So we're looking at your adrenal hormones, your production of cortisol. Is it low? Is it high? And what the pattern is like throughout the day, and whether you're having a nice awakening response of cortisol first thing in the morning. All of these things really impact how we feel. So I hope this episode has been insightful. I hope it's been helpful. I hope it's given you something to take away that you can action. The other thing I wanted to say about the testing, though, is that it's not, you don't have to do the test. So I work with clients, like I said, that don't have the budget for the testing, but we just, you know, we go by symptoms, we talk about what they're struggling with, there's full kind of health history to really get an idea of maybe their pathways aren't working very well, and we can support them. But all the foods that I've mentioned today, all of the lifestyle things that I've mentioned today, you know, be looking to do these things anyway and ditch the ones that aren't helpful, the things that hinder estrogen detox. Whether you're testing or not, you know, implement those things because they will support. So we don't have to rush out and do this test. I was, you know, just literally giving you the information so that you are empowered with that knowledge. That's what this whole podcast is about, empowered perimenopause. But, you know, if you don't have the budget for testing, it's literally just knowing what supports and doing that, and then knowing what hinders and removing those things. So again, I hope it's been helpful. As always, thank you for listening, and I will see you in the next episode. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.